Hi, my name is Steve Bell with TheNetworkingMasters.com, and I want to thank you for joining us today with this expert author interview with best-selling author Michael Port. Called a marketing guru by the Wall Street Journal, Michael Port has lectured, trained, inspired, and provided coaching and consulting services for over 20,000 business owners in the last 2 years alone. As a speaker, he has headlined events with leaders such as Tim Sanders and Tony Robbins. Michael is the author of the national best-selling book, Book Yourself Solid, and his new book, Beyond Booked Solid. Michael's company runs some of the largest and most respected online distance learning and coaching programs for small business owners. In fact, 93% of his coaching group, or his group coaching clients have implemented the Book Yourself Solid system have increased their numbers of clients, of which they serve by over 34%, and increased their sales by over 43% within the first year alone. Before starting his consulting business, Michael spent years honing his management skills by working in senior management for some of the premier health and fitness companies in the country, including the Sports Club Company and Clay, the most luxurious health club in New York, where he served as Senior Vice President of Operations. And if Michael looks familiar to you, that's because he was once a slightly famous actor starring in TV and films projects such as Sex and the City, Third Watch, All My Children, Guiding Light, Central Park West, 100 Center Street, The Pelican Brief, Down to Earth, Last Call, The Believer, and many more. Michael has also provided hundreds of television and radio commercials for companies such as AT&T, Pizza Hut, Braun Shavers, MTV, Home and Garden Network, Coors Beer, and many more. Michael has been a student of the martial art Aikido since 1996 and holds the rank of black belt. He's received a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology from Tulane University and a master's degree from New York University. And thank you very much, Michael, for joining us on the line here today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I hate to go back to stuff already done previously, but we had so much wonderful feedback from our previous call that we did with your last book, the book that preceded this, Book Yourself Solid. And I have to say, it's really an incredible call. And for the people who are listening on the line that never had a chance to join us on that particular call, as soon as the web replay comes up, there's going to be the HTTP web address posted there. So you can not only listen to and download this call, but you can listen to Michael's previous call that he did with us at the Networking Masters. And, Michael, I have to say that this book is awesome. It is really an incredible read. And what prompted you to write the sequel to your book, Book Yourself Solid?
Well, you know, it's a good question because usually sequels aren't very good. You know, if you look at most movie sequels, they're just not that good, with the exception of maybe the second Godfather. But then when they got to the third Godfather, they started having problems, right? But every once in a while, it works. In this case, I think it worked because, you know, according to Peter Drucker, who's, you know, by all accounts, one of the uber gurus of business thought, you know, in our not so recent history, he says there's really, you know, two functions to a business: marketing and innovation, and all the rest are costs. And it really struck a chord with me because the first book I wrote was all about marketing. Because when you start a service business or any kind of, you know, business on your own, your biggest concern at the beginning is, how am I just going to get clients? How am I going to make some money, you know, get people to pay me to do this? And that's a huge, huge area, you know, for anxiety. And it's generally our biggest concern, and we have the most pain from it. And so it's the most immediate need that needs to get addressed. So that's why I wrote that book first, because you got to make sure that you've got some business when you're in a service business. You know, it's not like you're building and manufacturing cars. You know, which you'd need to know more about how you're going to do it, probably, than even how you're going to sell it to start. But this is a service business, so you have a good sense of how you're going to deliver it. Maybe you went to school, maybe you trained, maybe you've got, you know, experience in it, background. So okay, fine, I can do this work. I just got to figure out how to get clients. Then you get some clients, or you're on your way to getting clients, and you start to realize, oh, my God, this is not at all what I thought it was cracked up to be. You know, it's what my friend Michael Gerber, who wrote The E-Myth, calls the entrepreneurial seizure. You sort of you get to the point where you're like, wait a minute. This is not what I thought it was supposed to be. I had a different idea, and I really feel that I'm losing my sense of myself, and I don't see my family anymore, and I'm really, really stressed out, and I'm doing all sorts of stuff I don't want to do. This is not why I went into business in the first place. And so that often becomes our reality. Or we're on our way, so we have some clients, yet we, you know, are starting to lose time because we don't have, you know, or we're starting to lose faith because we don't have a lot of time to go get more clients, even though we're not absolutely fully booked solid yet because we're so, you know, caught up in running the day-to-day operations. And I think that what Michael did in The E-Myth is great. I think it's one of the it's a seminal work on small business for, you know, in the, you know, really in the last, you know, 30 years, it's one of the best. However, and with all respect due to Michael and others that have written on this, I hadn't seen anyone address what I think to be the most critical aspect of turning a service business into a business that can get beyond booked solid, because all of the systems in the world, all of the, you know, flow charts and operation manuals and all of that kind of stuff is not going to do you any good unless you have a business model that is worth systematizing. So if you, you know, are still trying to figure out how to serve, you know, clients one-on-one, okay, maybe you think I'll get some other people to come in and help out. But still, you've got the same exact business model. There's still a ceiling on it. There's only so far that you can go. It's still trading time for money, and it's problematic. And so I wanted to write a book that first addressed this incredibly important issue of business architecture, the design of the business, the model of the business, so that it is scalable, leverageable, manageable, and more profitable than your current business model. Because once you have an idea of which business building blocks you would use to design that architecture, and in the book I offer about 11 different types of business building blocks, and there are definitely a few more out there that I didn't put in, but there I put in the major business blocks for a service-based business. Once you have an idea of what business blocks you're going to use and implement, then you can look about how you go about implementing that and how you can then create systems to run that business, how you can hire people, leverage yourself, outsource a lot of the busy work that you don't want to do, get better at doing projects, on and on and on, so that eventually the business is designed to serve the lifestyle you want to live and not, you know, as many have said before, a business that really, you know, that you are a slave to and eventually just becomes a job you hate.
Well, I think that's excellent. And just as a side note, I think your books are like the Lord of the Rings trilogy. There's really not a bad one. They're all excellent. So I really look forward to your upcoming books, too, and we'll talk briefly about that at the end. But one of the things that I really enjoyed right from the start was how you introduced your book. And you have a famous quote from Albert Einstein, and it mentions the significant problem we have cannot be solved at the same level of thinking that with which we created them. And I love that quote. Can you tell us how having the right mindset will help us overcome most of the business problems that we self-create?
Sure. I mean, that's exactly right. Almost every business problem that we have is self-created. Now, people have argued this with me in the past, and every once in a while they're right. But for the most part, many arguments that you can bring to me about that are easy to debate. You know, for example, you say, well, the market conditions have changed. Well, sure, but oftentimes your business is designed in such a way that it's not malleable. It's not adaptable. So, you know, right now I'm changing my business model because I think that we are going into a bit of a recession, and I want to be able to work differently. Plus, I've had some personal things change in my life, and I need to be home more than I used to be, and I want to have more control over when I travel. So I'm changing, another aspect of the business model. So the key is to be able to, you know, be very, very malleable so that you can deal with many different things that are coming, that are coming on. And so essentially most of the business problems you have are self-created because you have solved an older problem which created a new problem, and the new problem is a bigger problem, maybe, and maybe a better problem to have. You know, for example, the first problem you had in your business was, uh-oh, I have no clients. So you got some clients. The second problem you had is, uh-oh, I have clients. Now how, you know, do I continue to build this bigger business bigger when all of my time is locked up with clients? Or how do I continue to, you know, pursue all the hobbies and the other interests that I've got? How do I spend time with my family and make sure that I'm at every event that any of my kids have? How? These are all problems that we need to address, but they're problems that once we solve are going to bring us to another level, higher level of problems. You know, and that's what we want. Problems, I'm not a self-help guru, but, I think it's pretty safe to say that, that you can look at problems as good things or bad things, and many problems that we have are opportunities to, you know, to create a new way of being or a new way of working. And so that's why I love the Albert Einstein quote, because if we are willing to do that, if we're willing to, you know, solve the problems that are self-created with a new level of thinking, then that new level of thinking allows us to play a bigger game, a new game, a different game. And then, of course, we're going to create problems through that, and then we're going to solve those self-created problems with a new level of thinking, and so on and so forth. And we continue to increase our capacity to do big things through that process. And it's one of the things that I start talking about in the book because, you know, if you're willing to really dig down to the roots of your business problems and maybe even some personal problems, instead of just hacking at the leaves of what you think are the business problems, then you can do big things in the world. And I don't think it's easy. There are no three easy steps to it. But I do think it's worth it because ultimately you want to create a business that serves the lifestyle you'd like to live.
Excellent. And I think that's you brought up a great point of how a person gets to mass and they really want to find that next step to going beyond Book Solid. And in your book, you cover four critical pieces of that puzzle, which you briefly mentioned. Can we cover each one separately and
sure.
The importance of them in going
mm-hmm.
beyond Book Solid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to. Any particular one you want me to start with?
I always love leverage, so can
okay.
we start with that one?
Yeah. You know, leverage is a very, very critical concept of getting beyond Book Solid. And I've always been very interested in leverage, and I think it's sort of like, you know, my friends always tease me that if I could find a way, you know, to get them to do something for me, I would, you know? And that's sort of the concept of leverage. But if you're doing it well in a business, you're giving other people an opportunity to do things that make them feel fully self-expressed, allow their talents to shine and give them an opportunity to show off, right? So I just want to start by saying leverage doesn't mean you're just dumping stuff on other people, and it's not just delegation, and it's certainly not abdication. Leverage can come in many forms. Leverage can come through collaboration. Leverage can certainly come through outsourcing. Leverage can become, you know, can come through other people. But leverage can also come through the model of your business. And just as a very simple example, when I started my business, I would just work in a consulting fashion with businesses or individuals in a one-on-one. I'd go to them, or we'd talk on the phone, or they'd come to me. And that's not very leveraged. But then I started to put these same people into groups, and that was much more leveraged, right? And then I started writing books, and that was even more leveraged, right? So you want to look at what building blocks, and again, you know, some of the building blocks that I mentioned in the book are the intellectual property building block, the licensing building block, franchising building block, the train-the-trainer building block, the build-a-better-mousetrap building block, branding, building block, et cetera, and if you can use the building blocks, then those building blocks will give you some more leverage. And so the model that you create for your business must be inherently leverageable. You can't, it's not like saying, you know, sure, you can slightly leverage, say, other people if you're doing work one-on-one. You can get some other people to do busy work for you or get you to do your books or, you know, do your web stuff, all that kind of stuff. That's relatively leveraged. I mean, it's slightly, but it's not a model for a business that's then scalable. So you're slightly leveraging, you know, other people to help you get some things done, right? But if you want to really leverage, if you want to really create a model that has more leverage, then you have to look at how can it be, and this is the second point, how can it also be scalable? Because a scalable model is also going to be more leverageable. Scalable means it can continue to grow without significant change. There's always going to be some additions or some change that's, you know, that's consistent. But, for instance, the group programs that I do, whether they're online or offline, you know, meaning in-person seminars, they don't need to be changed if more people come. Now, I may need to add a few additional support staff or some additional trainers or, you know, increase the size of the rooms, you know, that I'm using at hotels or add some bandwidth to a particular, you know, server, that kind of thing. But essentially, the actual model for delivery doesn't need to change, and it doesn't take more work per se, maybe a little bit, but not any kind of extreme amount of work. It doesn't take more work for me to execute those programs or to market those programs. So that now you've got, you know, a model that is much more scalable and leverageable. And then the third point is that it's also more profitable. Because, you know, if you want to get beyond book solid, you got to look at how do you increase the profit margins of the business model that you are using, right? Or the business architecture that you are using. Because the greater your margins are, you know, the more that you're taking home. So if you, you know, if you have very, very small profit margins and you're making $1 million a month, but it's costing you $999,000 to make that, you know, $1 million, it's not really worth it. So you want to continue to look at how do I increase the margins in the particular model that, you know, I am developing. And then the fourth item is excellence. You really, if you can't create excellence, meaning you can't be remarkable, you can't do something that is extraordinary, in a business model that is leverageable, scalable, and profitable, then you probably shouldn't do it. Because just because it's leverageable, scalable, and profitable doesn't mean that it's going to work unless it's also excellent. And when I say excellent, you know, we're talking about being the best in the world at what you do for the people that you serve. It doesn't actually mean you're technically the best in the world, but for the people that you serve, they think you are.
That's a good point. I have a question from one of our listeners. Monique asks, is part of the profitability factor finding ways to decrease your costs, or do you just go ahead and increase your price? What would be your answer to that?
I mean, it may be one or the other. But again, it has a lot to do with your business model. So, for example, you know, there may be some price elasticity in your market, meaning that you may be able to stretch your prices. But there's a certain point where an elastic band breaks, and it's very hard to get more money for the same service, even if you jazz it up a bit. So, for example, you know, it's unlikely right now that if I put out a two-day seminar to my subscribers, the kind of people I serve, the target market that I have been serving and the subscriber base that I've been developing and writing books for these years, if I put out something, say, you know, this is a two-day workshop, it's $22,000 a person, I don't think I'd fill it. Would I get two people? instead of, you know, 40 people out of 1,000? I don't know. I could try it, but I think it's unlikely that for 2 days I'd get two people at $22,000 a person. But if you thought you could, then it may make sense to raise your prices so that it's, you know, so that it's dramatically different. I'm using an extreme example. But, you know, I find that, you know, that there's a certain elasticity to each of the kinds of products and services that we're selling. And once you get past that point, you break it, and you really can't bring in enough people to make it worthwhile. Plus, you also got to think about your services from a marketing perspective. You know, if I do an event with only two people there are only then two people, even if it makes me the same amount of money as if I had 40 people there, it only allows for two people to have success and go out in the world and talk about it. Whereas if I have an event and 40 people love it, then 40 people are out in the world talking about it, and that's very different. That's helping you bring in more people.
Mm-hmm. And a great way to leverage the power of word of mouth through the people you've already coached.
Of course. So, look, here's the thing. You know, I'm not saying one is better than the other, meaning somebody might do what I do and have a very different business model where they charge very, very high rates and only work with very few people. And it might be great. It might be perfect for their kind of target market based on the kind of work that they do, based on where they work, et cetera, et cetera. So those are some of the things that you've got to ask yourself as you're considering price elasticity as it relates to the people that you serve.
Now, what are some of the things that a person can to do to help increase the excellence in their business? Would that be just customer service, or would that also be in the follow-up process? Or what are some of the other things that our listeners would want to cover?
It's everything from your marketing to your delivery to the way that you invoice. It's everything that you do and don't do in your business. You know, it's not just how you deliver your service, which is obviously a significant part of it, but it's everything that you do and everything everybody else does in your business. And so, you know, you can go to a 5-star restaurant where the food is remarkable, but if, you know, if the wait staff is on, you know, has been smoking dope in the back, you're going to recommend the restaurant and say, look, the food's extraordinary, but I got to tell you, do not expect good service. Don't go there if you want good service. Go somewhere else, you know. So everything that you do speaks to the remarkability or the excellence of what you're offering. But at the end of the day, I think that it's dangerous for a service professional to think about developing their excellence or their remarkability in some sort of relation to another business owner. You know, which sort of sets up the compare and contrast model, which is good for commodities because, these two commodities are pretty much the same. This costs more, this costs less. I'll get the one that costs less. But for a service provider, that's a dangerous proposition. I think ultimately you know, what makes you excellent is who you are and what you stand for and the way that you treat people and deliver your service, you know, through those principles. Look, you know, as you know, there's a lot of principled discussion in the book, and there's some very specific philosophical underpinnings that support Book Yourself Solid as well as Beyond Book Solid. And my feeling is that all of the tactics in the world, all of the strategic practices in the world, all of the business acumen in the world is not going to do too much for you unless you have very, very specific philosophical principles which underpin all of the tactics you choose and the strategy that you pursue. And, you know, without that philosophy, you know, I don't know where to go, because I think you're sort of just running after shiny items trying to convince people to buy your stuff.
What are some of the errors people make that would hurt the excellence in their business?
Well, I mean, you know, errors are one thing, right? Errors are anything as simple as, you know, not having a good communication system, not having a good follow-up system, not being, you know, making sure that all your stuff is proofed well and, you know, and your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed. You know, making sure that if you do something that's sensitive in nature, that your files aren't hacked and stolen and your client's documents, you know, taken. All of those things, very basic functions of any professional environment. So I think, though, you know, the thing that has, one has to be more careful about is, as it relates to a service business, is that they are not trying to pursue some area of excellence in which they're not naturally talented. You know, so if you want to be a professional speaker and you're not a naturally gifted speaker, that's a dangerous proposition. I'm not saying, of course, you can't do it, but it's a dangerous proposition to not be good at something naturally and try to develop enough skill to be excellent or remarkable. Generally, the way you're excellent or remarkable is by showing off your natural talents, the things that you innately do well, the things that you're essentially born to do.
Now, we have a few questions going back to the leverage point, and these are from a few different people, but they basically are asking, is there different ways that I can leverage myself through the Internet via either a webcasting like we are right now,
mm-hmm.
Doing things such as e-zines or blogs? What are the most efficient ways of leveraging oneself on the Internet?
It's a great question. And, of course, because, you know, I don't have a specific individual to talk to with a specific business to speak about, I would just say this. There are lots of tools out there that give you, on the Internet especially, that give you a megaphone rather than, one of those, you know, like two cups on a string, right? A blog can be a megaphone. You know, social networking sites can be megaphones. But they're not, they don't automatically give you access to the megaphone. And sometimes your clients don't listen, you know, to the signal, you know, to the messages that are being sent out. So, for example, you know, if you have a target audience that spends no time in social networking sites and you're trying to use Facebook as a megaphone, it's not going to work. You're not going to be able to build up, you know, hundreds and then thousands of quote-unquote friends, you know, on your Facebook profile, you know, to, you know, that can act, at, you know, that can help spread your messages if they're not in that environment. Same thing, you know, if you're trying to do newsletters, but your target audience doesn't read e-newsletters, then they're not going to pay attention. So the key is to find out what they're paying attention to, see what kind of environments will give you more of a megaphone, and then, you know, use that megaphone in the most, with the highest integrity and value. But a blog, you know, is not just automatically going to give you a megaphone because, you know, you can shout all you want, but if nobody's listening, it's essentially like the megaphone's turned off. So the question is, can you get people there? How do you do it? And it's not a short-term thing. It's something that generally works when you really care about doing it and you want to be really, really good at it. And then people may start paying attention, and over time it turns into this wonderful megaphone message spreading tool. But there's, you know, the whole Internet is sort of, for the business owner, is essentially about leverage. It's about scalability, leverage. I just think, you know, you got to choose where you're going to focus and stay with it, you know, for the long term. Until it's clear that type of platform no longer works. But if you just keep jumping around, you're not really going to build up any kind of social significance online, and your audience won't believe that you're committed long term to them.
So if I understand correctly, basically you're saying, networking online is almost exactly like networking in person. You really need that visibility repetitively to build the credibility before you get to profitability.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you think, you know, my friend and colleague Seth Godin wrote a post recently. He said that someone at one of his seminars says, "What's the best way to make money with a blog?" And he said, "That's the last reason you should be writing a blog. You might, you know, over time make tons of money because your blog gives you more leverage, right? But it's not something that's going to happen right away, and you've got to commit it to the long term for it. And if the only reason you're going to write a blog is because you want more leverage or just because you want, you know, a bigger megaphone, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work. In fact, it may not work because of that, because that will be too apparent. It'll be transparent in your work, thus becoming apparent. And ultimately, you got to really enjoy and participate in the fullest way or manner in these different types of social networking environments online to be much more leveraged. But, you know, and social networking is one of the business building blocks that, you know, that I address in Beyond Book Solid. But when you're thinking about the business model for your business, you want to think about the model itself as being something that's leverageable. Most people very quickly go to marketing questions, networking. Well, how do I get more people to know what I'm talking about online? So there's a networking marketing type question. It's a great question. But if your business model is not leverageable, meaning it can't grow and scale, with very little additional work from you, then all of the talk about, you know, building a big presence online, using social networking sites or what have you, is not that relevant anymore if you're trying to get Beyond Book Solid. Does that make sense, Steve?
Absolutely. Yeah. And like one of the things that you do is on your webpage, you actually have a link to your social networking sites, Facebook and LinkedIn, where people can access you, directly. And I think one of the things I really like is not only does it allow you to keep that consistent touch, but, I like the fact that it creates more of a people can see you for who you are. You know, there's pictures of you in a class flipping a guy and a picture of you and your son. So those are, I think, add another dimension to you and your business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It just gives an opportunity for more interpersonal connection in a very leveraged way. But again, you know, that's a marketing issue rather than a business model issue. And I think it's a great issue to discuss, but I think that many folks will spend more time considering the marketing issues and maybe need to spend more time considering the architecture of the business, the design of the business, the mechanism through which you generate revenue and the multiple streams of leveraged revenue that you generate.
And that probably leads perfectly into our next question. In your book, you also touch upon how to find opportunities to earn passive and leveraged revenue. Why is how is this a key to going beyond Booked Solid?
Well, certainly, I'm not the first person to talk about passive or leveraged streams of revenue, but if you want to go beyond Booked Solid, it's very helpful to have multiple ways of generating revenue off the same group of clients that you've been serving, as opposed to one way, which of course presents its own dangers. If that source dries up, then you're in trouble, right? So I do make a distinction, though. Between passive and leveraged revenue. Passive revenue may be possible, but it's often a little bit of it's a little misleading. I don't know of too many sources of revenue that are truly passive. Unless, of course, you've inherited, $100 million and the interest you make off that is passive. But even that, someone had to work for that $100 million. Someone leveraged it, right? And then you have to do something with that money, like put it in a bank or a mutual fund or, the market, to generate these additional resources. You've got to leverage it in some way. So I think sometimes thinking about passive revenue is unrealistic, and people get bummed out because they don't realize that there has to got to do a certain amount of work, or you've got to leverage the work you've already done to create that additional revenue stream. Excuse me. So I often think about it more like passive revenue. Excuse me, more like leveraged revenue, where you're able to either A, reconfigure what you have into some additional leveraged revenue streams, or create a new revenue stream that leverages some of what you've already done. So, for example, excuse me. You know, if you're doing, you know, if you're doing one-on-one coaching, you turn. You also do group coaching. If you do group coaching, you also write books. If you write books, do group coaching, and do personal coaching, you also do speaking, for you know, paid speaking. If you do those four things, you also might do some additional other types of consulting. But you know, still you have to show up for those. But you're leveraging what you've done. But you have multiple streams of revenue, and there might be some leverage to it. Now, to take it a step farther, there might be other things that you can put into the business that are even more leveraged, that don't require so much of your time. Certainly, information products are a big part of that. Certainly, different types of online membership sites are, you know, can be a big part of that. Other types of products that you sell through your business that are supplementary or ancillary to your core business offering can create those leverage streams as well. So, for example, I am a distributor for Send Out Cards, which is a company that I think is fantastic. And it's a perfect ancillary offering to my target market, my clients, because they all need to send greeting cards as part of their networking strategy. And many of them do it already. And many of them do it or attempt to do it but don't do a great job at it. So what this product does is it gives them the ability to do a much better job at it, which is going to bring them in even more business. So it's a perfect ancillary or supplementary service or product for the people that I serve as it relates to the core offering of my business. But it's leveraged for me because you know, I've done the work to secure these clients, and I'm leveraging that relationship and trust to introduce a new product to them that I don't need to deliver. So I don't call that passive because I've got to do something to introduce them to it, and I've and I've done other work that brought in those clients so that I can introduce them to this other work as well. But I always remember that the key is it's ancillary or supplementary to my core offering. So it creates an additional leveraged stream of revenue, which is very profitable. So you want to look for opportunities like that. You know, if I was teaching yoga, I would be selling all sorts of yoga products, you know, to the clients that I already serve. It may only bring in $25,000, $30,000 additional revenue if I have a small yoga business, but who doesn't want $25,000, $30,000 in additional revenue for the year that maybe took, you know, a few hours of setup on your website by your web programmer, right?
So basically, what you're saying is you want to find complementary services to what you already have, and by having those at multiple streams of revenue, that's really key of that part of that leveraging process.
Yeah, leveraged, and also, you know, you're able to scale, you can continue to scale bigger because you're not necessarily delivering all of those services in person or at all. It might be another company entirely that's delivering for you or instead of you. So that gives you much more leverage. It starts to, you know, it also makes you a safer business because there's different streams of revenue coming in, and, you know, you got to be careful because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, really good point. Now, for our listeners here that are listening real quick, you really need to get your hands on Michael's book. And if you're listening live through the web feed right now, right below the web feed is a little link. It says Beyond Book Solid. If you click that link right now, it'll take you right to Amazon.com where you can purchase Michael's book. And don't just get one. Get two, three, or more because, like I say, you never want to hand out a book that you're never willing to get back. Plus, they also make great gifts for your clients that may have never had a chance to listen to this call. So not only can you give them Michael's book, you can give them the link to this call where they can listen to this interview as a supplement to the book that they have, and truly a phenomenal, phenomenal book. And if that isn't enough, Michael is very generous. And if you, there's another link that will give you a free chapter of Michael's book, Beyond Book Solid. And all you have to do is go there, fill out a quick little form, and you'll get that as a free gift for listening to this call or purchasing Michael's book. And
actually,
very generous.
Well, yeah, you know, if you're wondering what this, what my style of writing is, et cetera, just go to beyondbookedsolid.com. You can actually get 2 free chapters there, which is kind of cool. And then when you do buy the book, excuse me, you're given a web page to go to go ahead and download the Beyond Booked Solid Toolkit, which is a 92-page workbook that accompanies with additional information and additional resources and tools and worksheets that accompanies the actual book Beyond Booked Solid. And you could go actually download that right now from Beyond Booked Solid if you want, but a lot of it won't make sense to you unless you have the book. It's sort of one of those things. You kind of need the narrative to work through that. So there's lots of stuff that comes along with it, and I hope you go take advantage of it.
Oh, yeah. I just have to, selfishly plug it because I've been reading it 2 or 3 different times since I've received it. And it is just a phenomenal book. It's very easy to read. I believe it's very easy to follow. And I think there's so many good gems of information in the book. And especially with the workbook, you can just work through it and then self-assess yourself. Now, Michael, one of the questions that we have from our listeners are, one of the questions is, how are you, they want to write a book of their own, and they want to know what are some of the different ways they can leverage their book to help them in their coaching business?
Oh, well, I mean, the book is one of the greatest pieces of leverage that you can create for yourself, especially, of course, if you can get it widely distributed. So if you write a book and, 12 people read it, it's not going to do much for you. Maybe it'll do a little bit for you, but you've got to make sure that first you're working on writing a book that, that as many people as possible in your target audience will buy, that you've got a company or people or, i.e. a publisher that is going to distribute it for you. You'll still have to market it, but they'll go ahead and distribute it for you. And that's first, because then it can support a business model that is the back end to the book. Now, you never write a book that is just designed to sell other products. People do that. I think it's ridiculous. You never do that. The book should stand on its own 2 feet and be able to, run marathons. But, especially if you're in some sort of consulting-type service business, many people will want more of you and more to do with you or with your staff, et cetera, around the issues that you address in the book. So, it's the reason that I do live seminars on Book Yourself Solid and Beyond Book Solid, that I do online courses for Book Yourself Solid and Beyond Book Solid. So while you're creating the book, you're also designing the model that is going to allow you to create, much more leveraged offerings that are not just you showing up, but if they are you showing up, that you're doing it with much more people, many more people, at the same time, rather than just you and that one person who then called you from reading the book. Does that make sense, Steve?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And talking about books, I just want to touch really briefly about your upcoming books, The Contrarian Effect and The Think Big Manifesto. Can you give us a brief trailer, if I may, of your upcoming books?
Oh, sure. Well, the Think Big Manifesto is a book that I will start writing very shortly, I promise. We're just starting to go out and shop it very shortly. So that'll probably come out, I thought, in this year, but it'll end up probably being beginning of 2009, or actually summer of 2009. We'll see. Not sure. But I do know that I have a new book coming out in August, September of this year, 2008, which is just a few months away, called The Contrarian Effect, Why It Pays Big to Take Typical Sales Advice and Do the Opposite. And I co-wrote that with Elizabeth Marshall, who's been working with me for a long time, who's just a fabulous writer and a really, really smart, smart person. It's this very irreverent look at all of the typical tactics that most sales books and sales trainers teach, and and suggests alternative ways of going about, making sales, because most of those are from the dark ages and, frankly, are just absurd now. So it's actually quite good, and that's a really fun read. It's only about 30,000 words, as opposed to it's a shorter, smaller book. It's a great message book, as opposed to a heavy content book. But when you read that, you'll get it fast.
Excellent. That is excellent. And hopefully we can bring you on for an interview for that book, too. That'd be awesome.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions that I have goes back to those four key points. If there was one of those points that you thought were most important to build in your business,
mm-hmm.
And going back to that coaching aspect, which one of those four pieces do you feel is the most important?
I can't go there, because I don't think, if it's scalable but it's not leverageable, I don't know how you can't really have one without the other. I would say maybe you could have something that's scalable, leverageable, and not super profitable, but still profitable enough to make it worthwhile. So I guess maybe that, could come in second or third, rather, to, scalable and leverageable. But then excellence, is got to be up there too. My feeling is, why do it unless it's excellent? And I suppose, again, you could do something that's scalable and leverageable, that's not super profitable and not super excellent. It's like the dollar store, just whatever, it's just stuff. And you have a business around it, that's fine. But if you're in a service business, you're in the business, you're going to stand in the service of other people as you stand in the service of your destiny. You're doing this as an opportunity for self-expression. And if you're not, doing it in a way that's special or extraordinary, what's the point? You're not going to want to continue to do that.
Good point. Now, Michael, this is going to be a hard question to ask, because it's kind of like asking a father, which one is your most favorite child? Is there a particular chapter in your book that you feel is really one of the most important parts, the must-read, to make sure we get the most out of your book?
So, everyone, skip. Just out of the 14 chapters, just read this one. No, I would say, that's really funny, it's like, which is your favorite child? I would say, oh God, that's tough. But my favorite, I think, is chapter 5. Because there's some philosophy in there that I just think is so incredibly important. It's about preparing yourself for the future. So I am partial to that one. But I also like 3 and 2 and 1 and 6 and 7 and 8, 9, 10, and 11 and 12 and 13 and 14 are all pretty good, too.
I'd say if it was your child, that'd be a good cover. But now, I know we're just kind of winding up the call real quickly here, but if there's one key principle that you can kind of drop for our listeners on helping them improve their business in 2008, what would that one key piece of advice be?
Be someone who discloses new things and new places and new people. Meaning that, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to be somebody that does big things in the world, then you've got to keep discovering or disclosing new worlds. So, you've got to be able to articulate what you want. You've got to be able to reconfigure what you have into something else that you want, rather than just rebelling against what you have and trying to start new. Instead, reconfigure what you have and turn it into something that you want. And lastly, cross-appropriate from other environments. If you want to do something remarkable in your environment, if you want to build a model or an architecture that is new and inspired and going to get people to talk about it, you may want to start to look in other industries, in other markets, in other environments for models that are working there that you can cross-appropriate, you can take and bring into your environment in a way that's going to be very, very special. And that's That's called being a conscious discloser. So disclose new spaces continuously, or else you're going to just stay just exactly where you are right now.
Mm-hmm. To continually grow and educate yourself.
Yeah, but it's more than just growing and educating. You know, it's in order to do those things, it's being it's being somebody who's ahistorical, being somebody who can create a future that is independent of the past. And I think there are three very specific things that need to be done. You've got to be able to articulate where you want to go. You've got to be able to reconfigure what you have and turn it into what you want. And cross-appropriate, meaning take things from outside of your current space and adopt them, appropriate them, steal them, so that you are bringing new ways of operating into your marketplace, which is going to attract people to you.
Excellent. Now, I always love talking to you because we always get some great information, and I think you just dropped this huge gold nugget on our laps, because like just that last bit of information itself is its own call.
Mm-hmm.
But I really have to say I love your book. And for everyone listening, wherever you are across the world, click on the Beyond Book Solid button right now, and that'll take you to Amazon.com where you can order Michael's book. And like I said, don't order just one, two. Buy three or four, because everyone always needs one to give to their business colleague or to their best customers to help them get through that booked solid state so they can become even more profitable. And if you haven't done so already, while you're waiting for the book to be shipped in the mail, make sure you go to Michael's webpage where you'll get not only one but two free chapters on Michael's book, Beyond Book Solid. And we'll be posting this call right away, so shortly after this call is over, you can revisit this webpage where you listen to us now, where you can download or listen to the audio of this call. Plus, if you'd like to listen to this call or many more, such as Michael's previous call with Book Yourself Solid, go to thenetworkingmasters.com and register for free, where you'll get access to the downloads, where you can download and listen to all the calls from all of our different experts that we've held throughout the last few years. So go to thenetworkingmasters.com, check it out. Also visit Michael's webpage where you can download his two free chapters, and also visit his webpage, beyondbookedsolid.com. So any final parting words, Michael?
I think that's it for today.
Super. And thank you all for joining us at thenetworkingmasters.com.